Well, what if eventually in their life everybody that's been on a Wheaties box does change genders?
Man,
We have a
Kirby
lot to look
Puckett. Can you
forward
imagine
to in
Kirby?
pop culture.
Can you imagine Kirby Puckett on the? He was the player that my grandma, when she was 75 years old, announced at Christmas that she thought Kirby Puckett had a nice ass.
Well, there's plenty of it to go
True
around.
story.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like your family. No, I'm just kidding.
Most true.
This is the 70s versus the 80s podcast, the podcast that makes you feel the same way you used to feel when you take your sweaty hand and plunge it to the bottom of your Captain Crunch to get that plastic decoder ring and pull it out. And so we're going to talk serials today. We're going to talk Battle of the Network Stars versus Superstars. But since we just saw the Super Bowl here and we saw a real famous player, I can't, what was his name? Tom Brady. I thought I
Something
would
like
add,
that. It
yeah.
was either Tom or Greg Brady, one or the other.
Greg,
Right,
one of the
right.
Brady's, yeah. So I
He
thought I'd
actually
ask.
broke a sister's nose with a football at one point in time.
No, get tired of that. That was Jan, right?
I believe
No,
so.
no,
Middle
Marsha.
Marsha.
Yeah.
Marsha gets a broken nose, and I never get any.
So let's start with you, Jim. Who was your most favorite underrated football player from back in the day?
I don't know if this is going to be an obvious choice, and it sure is a convenient choice, but I think Fran Tarkenton was really an underrated quarterback. He's known as being a scrambler because he never really threw a tight spiral, but he had the calculus in his head to manage, a run down the field, and I think somehow he's able to do all the geometry and calculus in his head and make it happen. And I think there is, I've never been a conspiracy guy, but I think there is something tangible to the whole refs hate the Vikings thing. Refs have talked since then and said, yeah, we didn't like, there's people there we didn't like, and yeah. So for me, Fran Tarkenton, definitely.
Okay. So yeah, I don't know if he's underrated. I think he's rated pretty high, but who do you got, Brian?
He's rated high because he's a scrambler and stuff, but I don't see him like topping a lot of,
Yeah. I don't think
when he
people
retired, I think he had the most passing
did.
yards.
He did.
Yeah.
But he still wasn't rated that highly. And if we're talking about rating, if we're talking about skill, I'll go elsewhere. But for
The
rating, I
problem,
don't think
yeah.
that good.
His thing was he was contemporary to Bradshaw. He may well have been a better quarterback than Bradshaw, but since Bradshaw won four Super Bowls,
And
everyone
Bradshaw
like
wasn't as mobile.
Bradshaw, Bradshaw, Bradshaw.
Yep.
Yeah, Frank, Tark was a lot more mobile than Jerry Breanna or different types of quarterbacks, but definitely a little bit more mobile than, Bradshaw out there. He was more of a muscle and bone guy, and Fran was a little bit more of a finesse guy. But anyway.
So who do you got, Brian?
So I have a Minnesota Viking outside linebacker from the time I was about 4 years old till the time I was 16, Matt Blair. He was a second round draft pick. He went to six Pro Bowls, and he was with two of the Super Bowl teams.
Yeah, super nice
All the
guy
way to
too.
the
Yeah, and then my favorite thing is he would block kicks on special teams. The Vikings had a knack for great special teams during the Bud Grant years. Matt Blair was a kind of a lanky, tall outside linebacker who could jump, and so he must have blocked at least a half dozen kicks in his career. It was a favorite thing when you're a little kid to see
Yeah.
him like jump up and block a field goal or something like that.
But yeah, I met him once. He's a great guy too. Yeah, he just passed away recently, though.
Sadly. I think it was in October of 2020.
Did he really, Matt Blair?
Did he pass? Yeah, he was 70.
Boy, is that old? He didn't look that old.
Which nowadays, I don't feel like that's that old anymore.
Yeah, it really isn't.
All right. So for my player, I'm keeping it in the NFC North too. He's a Detroit Lion. He wore number 20. He was a running back. His initials were BS. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? Of course. Billy Barry Sims, Sanders. Not Barry Sanders. Billy Sims. He was before Barry Sanders. And when I was little, I had a football that was autographed by, not, you know, you get that fake autograph that they come with. It was Billy Sims. And he was when I first started watching, when I was old enough to watch college football. He was with Oklahoma, and he was just electric. And then he rushed for over 200 yards in his first NFL game. And he looked like he was on his way to superstardom, and he blew his knee out in the Metrodome about 2 years later. So, and that was it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. And then they drafted Barry Sanders a couple years after that. Yeah.
NFC North at that time, with the running backs, when they had Billy Sims and then Barry Sanders with the Lions, and the Vikings had Chuck Foreman. And then the Bears, of course, had one of the greats of all time, Walter Payton. Just amazing running back group in the NFC North at that time. And there's that other team. I don't even know if they played in the 70s.
Oh, the Packers, yeah.
I can't remember their name, yeah.
If we're going to go second round pick, again, another guy that probably, well, maybe not be underrated, but he didn't get a lot of the press because he didn't have a Super Bowl, was Chris Dolman. I think that guy was just an amazing player. He had the strongest hands, they always said, in the league. And he had some behavioral issues, and the fact that they didn't win Super Bowls, I think that hurt him in terms of, you know, notoriety.
I believe he made the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, did he?
Did he make it after he died, or?
He died too?
Yeah, just recently.
What the fuck? You guys are supposed to call me.
I'll put you on the list.
You know, the guy that bought my cabin at North Plate for the Vikings, and so I had a ball from when I was a young kid. My dad knew, remember Willie Teal and Tommy Hannon?
I remember Willie Teal, yeah.
Yeah.
They were buddies because he worked part-time for a company that was in the floor below where my dad worked. And so one day my dad brings home a football, Viking, all the Vikings players were on it, except for one or two. And the guy that bought my cabin up there happened to be the one of the two. And so he signed it like 40 years later after I got it. It's awesome. I'm going to go get it.
Yeah, you do that.
I sleep with it.
All right. So, do you guys want to talk some cereal or?
Let's do that.
Absolutely.
Perfect segue.
Okay. So, all right. So, what do you guys? What was your favorite cereal growing up? We'll start with Brian this time.
Well, so I knew that we were going to be talking about this, and I really can't think of a favorite cereal from like the 70s. I can tell you least favorites for sure. Kix. It was like eating styrofoam packing peanuts.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
That's the first thing I thought of when you said worst.
Yeah, Kix was terrible.
And to me, they looked like the peanut butter. What was that peanut butter cereal? They looked the same as Kix, so you thought, oh, these are gonna be good.
Yeah, or it's like a not chocolate cocoa puffs.
Yeah. They turn the cereal chocolate.
That's terrible.
Were you guys into mini wheats or the hay bales? Did you like those? I liked them.
I'm okay with them now, but as a kid, I thought they were terrible as well. It's like eating a sugary Brillo pad.
Yeah, like a hay bale. Yep. Yeah.
anything that you could eat, and then you had like a flavored milk, you know, thing left for like a dessert. You know, I'm going to strain the little parts out of there, and I've got a big cup of chocolate milk.
Or the Lucky Charms where you dexterously move your spoon around so you get all the non-marshmallow parts first, so then you just have the marshmallows, and the longer time with the marshmallows in there, it color your milk better, and then you'd finish up with the marshmallows.
It's amazing.
It teaches you willpower.
Yeah. I'm glad that I'm normal because I did all of that stuff.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. They got Shamrock Lucky Charms out right now that turn your milk green.
I saw that. I almost bought it. Even
I know
it's like the Chicago, the river in Chicago. Every
so, how about I think an underrated cereal was Apple Jacks. That was pretty solid, and nobody. I don't think anybody has it in their top one or two, but that was pretty solid.
Apple Jacks was great. It was like Cheerios, but with that, you know, apple, I think apple cinnamon flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you got a little older and you found out Applejack was also a type of whiskey.
Yep. And chewing tobacco.
Yes.
Mike, any other cereals like the Booberry, Count Chocula, there's more we might care Frankenberry. Yep. I also like the Fruity Pebbles. Cocoa Pebbles and Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, Fruity Pebbles was good. Trix was good.
Peanut butter, Captain Crunch, solid.
Yeah, were Trix and Fruit Loops the same but different shapes? Because they were both that fruity, or did they taste different?
I don't know. Trix, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's like different. One was like Fruit Loops was Kellogg's, and Trix was General Mills.
Yeah.
And so you had to mimic the other one without exactly copying them.
Yeah. Have you guys had Cracknell Brand?
Not, I can't remember it. That's a bit.
That stuff is really, really good. I love that stuff. I bought it just to kind of get some fiber. It's expensive, but it's really, really tasty. I'm not kidding.
I know this is good out of the 70s and 80s, but in the early 2000s, General Mills did Cheerios, but then they put like freeze dried fruit in it. So it's like Berry Burst Cheerios, like the strawberry or something. Those were good, and they don't make them anymore.
I don't know
if it was an expense thing or what with the freeze-dried strawberries in it, but that, again, you let the strawberries sit in your milk, and then by the end they kind of rehydrated, but it'd be like strawberries and cream instead of colored milk.
What was the deal?
Older, more sophisticated as we...
How about Raisin Bran? Anybody with the Raisin Bran?
Yeah, I liked Post, but I didn't like Kellogg's. They were different. They both had Raisin Bran. Yep.
To this day, we will buy Post when we buy Raisin Bran instead of Kellogg's.
I think
the actual bran flakes in Post is more flavorful.
Yeah, and then the Kellogg's raisins are like little hard sugar, and they have sugar coating. Post is just like raisins,
And then Post is like when we talked about third wheels, like RC Cola versus Coke and Pepsi, and like Bubble Yum versus Bubblicious and Hubba Bubba. So Post is like the third to the party against General Mills and Kellogg's, so you got to support the little guy once in a while.
So, what was the deal with Wheaties when we were young? Because now they change every time there's a new champion, they change the label. But do you guys remember when we had Bruce Jenner? I mean, he changed the Caitlyn Jenner. I mean, we had him for years. We had him for like a good decade there. It was only Bruce Jenner. Do you remember that?
I was going to say, they couldn't find any more transgender people to put on the box.
Well, what if eventually in their life everybody that's been on a Wheaties box does change genders?
That would
be a lot Puckett, to look forward to Kirby, in pop culture.
Can you imagine Kirby Puckett on the? That would take a lot of space heaters and some smelling salts to get that going. But he was the player that my grandma, when she was 75 years old, announced at Christmas that she thought Kirby Puckett had a nice ass.
Well, there's plenty of it to go around.
Story.
Yeah, doesn't sound like your family. No, I'm just kidding.
The most truthful thing you said about his family all year.
So, do you guys remember? I mentioned at the beginning the toy. Do you remember any of the cereal toys at all, that came in the boxes?
Vaguely, the boat with the baking soda.
Weren't there ones too where you had to collect six of them, so you'd have to buy different boxes to get the other pieces?
Yeah.
Well, no, I remember that one.
Do you remember the mini?
Go ahead.
The mini license plates for your bicycle that came in honeycombs, and they'd have all 50 states.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep.
That hoodie is boss, by the way, that you're wearing that hoodie.
Cool.
I was going to say something, and now I forgot. Fuck. What were we talking about again?
Well, the license plates, because I remember having to go buy them at Target or whatever and try to find your name.
Yeah.
There was like a toy submarine, and you put baking soda in it and snap it shut, and it would dive and come back up and dive and come back up.
Or what about, I was looking these up, or do you remember when alphabets had the terrarium, so you could get like, there was either a bubble shaped one or a rectangle, and you'd get these seeds, and it would be like a little miniature greenhouse, and they
Yeah, so
were,
there'd be like
I
little
don't mean that.
foam pieces you put in there to water. Yes, I
Yeah.
do remember that. That was alphabets.
They said it was alphabets when I looked it up. Yeah,
I
they
don't
had
remember
this.
that.
I don't remember us having the cereal, but I distinctly remember that because we'd put them like in the windowsills then of our kitchen because they had a southern exposure and those little terrariums.
Yep.
I've got some in my kitchen now, but I didn't get them out of a cereal box.
Or do you remember when they put
Okay.
the little, I was kind of looking at this, remember when they had the little 45 records on the back of the cereal too? Like you'd get the Jackson 5 or.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't
sometimes
remember
they'd be
that.
cardboard, but they'd still play. I don't know how they did it. It would be, they weren't like real ones. They were like thin and
Right.
flimsy. Like they were kind of like a floppy disk, but they would work. It was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, the needle, all it needs is vibration. So, if that's there, it doesn't matter what the medium is, I think, but I don't remember that.
To this day, I have a couple Christmas CDs that came in Chex Mix at Christmas time when people were buying Chex to, Chex cereals to make Chex Mix. I've got two, like just various artists' Christmas things that came in the Chex Mix cereal at Christmas time.
Yeah, I remember when they
Cool.
got CDs because at the time we thought it was big. Now we didn't realize how cheap CDs were. They'd just throw them in a box of cereal and it's like.
Yeah. When you've got your first CD is like, in 1988, I bought my first CD for like $15.99.
Yep, I
Yeah, like
remember
you said.
Mike's first CD was the Springsteen box set that he got
Yep.
for Christmas in what was that, Mike? Like 85
85.
or 6?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, you're really cutting edge. Like I said, I didn't get my first CD to 88. My future college roommate bought a CD player at the Best Buy in St. Cloud because up at St. John's at the time. And I didn't have a CD player, but I bought a CD anyways because we got like 10% off. I bought Steve Earle's Copperhead Road.
Oh yeah, that's a solid one. That's solid. Yeah, here's the thing. Not to make everybody feel old, but you remember that time, kind of in high school, where you were kind of laughing at the younger kids that they didn't know what an 8-track was, and then you kind of got to the age where you're laughing at kids that don't know what a cassette was. Then you're really old when you're to state we are that kids don't know what a fucking CD is. That's old.
And
My
cars don't have CD players anymore. The new ones, they don't have them.
mine doesn't.
No.
Yeah, so I'm keeping my 2010 because it's got a CD player.
Actually, I think mine does, but I don't have any CDs for it. I hotwired it so I can watch movies in the dash, but
That's a good choice. But
it's illegal.
that's safe, yeah. But it's funny because like CDs, the number two, digital is the number one way to sell music, but now vinyl's number two now. Like, and there's
Yeah, all the
nothing else even
hipsters.
close, yeah.
That almost went completely away, and I think what brought it back was like that whole culture of hip hop and stuff like that, where they were,
Scratching.
scratching and all that stuff.
Well,
I think that saved the record industry.
there's something too about the warmth of listening to music through vinyl, and then even if you had some people, well, you can buy vacuum tube amplifiers as opposed to the digital. So you get that, it's a more warm sound. Now, CD is so crisp and accurate, and you can hear everything. You don't get any hiss in the background. But there's just something about that warmth of a vacuum tube amplifier and the skips and cracks and pops of a record. You're listening to music as opposed to
Data.
music should be messy and human, and there should be mistakes included, and it gets you up and moves around as opposed to being clinical and every note's perfect and the sound's crisp and perfect, because then it's just like, yeah.
Yeah, they're interpreting like data signals. I remember when the Steve Winwood album came out, Higher Love or whatever that was, with that on there.
That's
Mike, help me.
yeah, that's probably, I think it was called Higher Love, wasn't it?
Yeah, and listening to that, it was all treble and no bass, and it was all just perfectly. And I thought, I kind of don't like this, And then Boston Third Stage came out, and again, very meticulous. And I didn't like that kind of music. I like the, like Brian was saying, the human aspect of music.
You get a human, a fantastic human bass player that's just anchoring a song down, and it's much better than like you said, the trebly, techno, poppy, anything.
Yeah.
It gets grittier. It makes you feel it in your soul. It moves you. It's like you feel that bass hitting you, or even if a good drummer that's got like a double bass drum set up, you when you're in a concert, you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
It's you're experiencing it with more than just one sense.
After that, Brian, do you ever need to change clothes, or are you okay? I mean, you can kind of, you know, up close personal.
So yeah, that music pumps us up. And when you talk reality television today, I don't think you can really talk about it without Battle of the Network Stars, which started in 76. And then that music, I believe, is from the same channel, ABC Superstars, which was, I don't know, did you guys know that was started by Dick Button? Was the one
that's... I did.
I think he just wanted to
shopped it around.
He just wanted to throw a bunch of test. If you go for a show with a ton of testosterone, you just want to go Dick Button all day long, right?
Yes, because he's got that, you know, super golf commentator when he was doing skating commentating.
I don't remember that name. I guess I do remember something with ice skating. Is he a figure skater or something?
Yep.
He won like gold medals in like the 52 and 56 Olympics. Okay. But what I remember him from, because I'm a big Olympics junkie, I love watching it. Summer and winter, is he would commentate on the skating, and it would just be that, you know, that's the triple axel, and he skates away from it. It's looking good tonight, you know, holding nice clean lines, just total, you know, smooth like golf commentary.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, I just about an hour ago, I was binging on Payne Stewart clips on YouTube,
as one does. Yeah. Yeah, he was a sharp dresser, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, all right, Michael, lead us in.
Okay, so yeah, like we said, ABC Superstar just started in 73, and then Battle of the Network Stars started in 1976. I think everybody's pretty familiar with the formats of these shows, do you think? Or how would you describe them?
I think anybody over, like, our age will remember, but I guess it was just kind of a fellowship thing is the way I looked at it. There was rivalry between the networks, and they decided to take it out on the field.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like any time. You get a bunch of group of friends together, and you're playing cornhole or something like that. You got 8 or 10 friends that are just going to be gabbing, and they're there to drink beer, and they're there for the fun, and then you have those 2 or 3 ultra-competitive friends. And that's kind of the way it was with the Superstars. I mean, they were athletes, but some of them were more athletic than others. And yeah, it's not like the Ninja Warrior now where they're just fantastic athletes and it's just a really wild course that they go through. It was just, they just picked things like, we're going to ride a bicycle 4 times around the track, or they did the 100-yard dash. And they just, it was some planned city in Florida where they would held the Superstars, at least the first few of them.
Yeah. So
it was just like on the high school track, and people would just be, the spectators just be kind of ambling around there. It was so just not the high production values of stuff today.
Yeah.
Which is kind of part of the charm. If you would have any younger listeners, and you're certainly encouraged to go watch it, because this is just some incredible janky stuff
that
they did with these athletes at the time.
They'd have like Lou Ferrigno, you know, in the pit with a tug of war thing around his waist, you know. And remember that they have Lou Ferrigno on one side.
Yep.
When the Incredible Hulk was still on, and he was deaf, so he'd be like, "Everyone,
he was on a team with such other athletic superstars as Valerie Bertinelli, Charlene Tilton from Dallas.
Oh yeah,
and David Letterman.
Oh,
was he on though?
Letterman, because he was like on some Mary Tyler Moore. Not it wasn't Mary Tyler Moore show. It was like she had a variety show called Mary, and David Letterman was on it. And that's what caused him. He was on the fifth episode of Battle of the Network Stars. Dave Letterman. On the
and he swam the anchor. When I was watching a swimming episode, the last person had to swim both lengths of the Olympic pool, and he was the anchor on his team. Yeah. So
well, it's,
wow.
Why don't you bring up swimming? Because that's kind of superstars started off with a bang. It was the first one was won by a pole vaulter. It's like, all right, you know, obviously that's a person
Bob Segrin, is
lean and in good shape because of the type of thing. But Joe Frazier, the boxer, 50-yard swimming, right, down and back, nearly drowns. He'd never swam before.
You got it.
And they're like, well, why did you do that? He's like, well, how was I to know I couldn't do it unless I tried it? Well, I'm not going to walk a tight wire across the Grand Canyon thinking, well, I might be able to do that.
Oh, good point.
He also, oh, then he had very encouraging words for Mark Spitz, because the first Superstars was in 73, so that's right after Mark Spitz won 7 golds at the 72 Summer Olympics, and he called him a tough Samuel L. Jackson's favorite phrase.
Oh,
motherfucker?
Wow.
Well, I don't know if you want to put a listed on this, right? He called him a tough motherfucker, yeah.
They must have beefed it out, though.
Yeah, well, yes.
And, yeah, so that was great. And then what about Battle of the Network Stars? Do you... Probably the best athlete on that was Gabe Kaplan for some reason.
He was the captain of the first team. Like, the first team that won was ABC on that first episode. And he was the captain. And they had, like, Linda Carter. So this is how you got ratings, because people aren't, well.
Oh, yeah.
We were a little young at that time. But Linda Carter, Farrah Fawcett were on the first championship team. You know, Gabe Kaplan was a captain. Ron Howard was on it. And then Robert Haggis, who was also, I think he was Epstein on Welcome Back, Cotter.
He was on a
team.
Bunch of them, yep.
Hal Linden, so Barney Miller was on that team, but they were the champions. What they did is I think they had the three networks, because we're old enough to remember when there were three networks. And then they would do just these sports accrue points, almost like a decathlon. And then at the end, one team would be eliminated, and the other two teams would just have a tug of war. And whoever won the tug of war won.
I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember tug of war. I mean, the Vikings-Steelers tug-of-war when they did the super teams, which is kind of an offshoot of the superstars, is, like, legendary.
Hmm.
And then I think the Kansas City Royals and maybe the L.A. Dodgers or someone had a tug-of-war that is after 45 minutes, whatever, they just let it end in a tie.
Yeah, they just stopped it because, like, neither team was even close to winning, yeah. It went on. I thought it went on for hours, though. I could be wrong, but, yeah.
The Vikings one went on for so long.
It was 2 hours, yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking to Mike about this a couple nights ago, and, you know, you're watching that show, and it's got the entertainment value and all that kind of stuff, and everybody's out there smiling, and then you got the all-time dick. I was telling Mike, the all-time Hollywood dick was Robert Conrad, because he would come in there, and he was all serious about it, and who was it, Mike, that was arguing with him?
It was Gabe Kaplan.
Gabe Kaplan.
Yeah, because he was captain of the NBC team. Robert Wagner was.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. But he got in kind of a, some sort of a argument with Gabe Kaplan, and Gabe Kaplan said something like, well, you know, I'm Jewish and blah, blah. And Conrad says, and I'm German, so I want to kill all of them. You saw that, Mike, right? Did you watch that clip?
Yeah, and Telly Savalas said, I'm Greek, and then Robert Conrad says, he goes, I'm German, I want to kill both of you guys.
I want to kill them both.
Yeah.
The 70s was a different time.
So then they settled it by having Gabe Kaplan and Robert Conrad run, I think they only ran 100 yards for the settle it. And so Conrad gets down and like he's in the starter blocks and Gabe Kaplan just stands up and Gabe Kaplan just blew him off the track. Like it wasn't.
Did he really?
And who's seen it coming? Nobody would see that coming because Robert Conrad was a tough guy. Yeah.
And Conrad did a Columbo episode where he was like, a fitness guru or whatever, and even fucking Peter Falk beat him.
So ABC kind of took it serious because they had like Howard Cosell, and I know with the superstars they had Keith Jackson out there doing commentary in their gold, you know, gold, those gold blazers,
gold jackets. They were uniforms. Yep. Yep.
Those gold blazers are just, you know, they're second in line for the '70s to the brown leather leisure suit that
good old Paul and Howard Cosell just adds authenticity, because even when he's doing Battle of the Network Stars, I like how his voice would be quiet and then he'd hit that crescendo. He's like, he's like,
he's a showman, definitely.
Yeah, who was, Linda Carter. He's like, she's doing the kayak and he's like, you know, she's athletic because she plays Wonder Woman and she can do amazing things like that right there. And then he just goes up and then. Like if you go on YouTube when they announce Linda Carter when she's in the swimsuit ready to get in the pool, I mean, we were really young and I'm like, I don't know. I was like just staring at the TV and all of a sudden Linda Carter comes on. I didn't really know how I was feeling, but all of a sudden it was like, I mean, and I never forgot that. Yeah, it was just like crazy. But
yeah, because the second episode for the commentators, it was Howard Cosell, and then it was Bruce, now Caitlyn Jenner, and O.J. Simpson. So that's just some top-notch
icons
of the 70s.
Yeah, and O.J. Simpson held the track record, the fastest time in the 100 on Superstars. And I guess they said he wore sneakers. He didn't wear spikes. I don't know what the story was behind that. But he still held the record. Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about, so everything for the Superstars pointed to the final obstacle course, and as a 6 or 7 or 8 year old watching it on ABC, on Wide World Sports, whenever it aired, it was kind of impressive. It's like a 12-foot wall with a rope on it, and then they had to go through a tunnel, and then they had to push a blocking sled, and then through tires, and then jump a water pit, and a 4'6" high bar, and then like two hurdles, and across the finish line, and it's just it was hand timed, or it was just,
and back then everybody had those shorts that were only like 8 inches,
those dolphin shorts.
They had the white stripe up the side.
Yes.
They had their socks that came all the way up to their kneecaps and then folded over just about an inch. And, they had most of them had the afros or lots of hair or whatever. And they're out there running like Stan Smith Adidas or whatever it was. And it's just funny to watch, especially if you ever watching an NBA game, like an old NBA game when they've got those shorts on. It's just like, how did people not just like pinch their penis right off when they're, twisting in those short shorts?
And then they had the long socks with the short shorts and long socks. Yep.
Yeah.
Knee highs. Yep.
Oh, it didn't look pretty comfortable.
The thing is, on Superstars, when they eventually, and this is all stuff that would never happen today, but they would have the World Series champion take on the Super Bowl champs in the team Superstars, and the baseball team actually won like every other year. I thought the football team would win every year, but the baseball team won every other year.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, Oakland A's were in it 1 year. They won it. And then they must have had the Super Bowl teams, because I do remember the Steelers and Vikings going against each other. Did they have the two Super Bowl teams square off a couple times or something?
Yes. It was both the Super Bowl teams and the World Series teams, unless the Yankees won, because Steinbrenner was such a prick. Then the other team, whoever had been the AL West champion, would have went in their place. That may have been why like Kansas City Royals went in 78 or 79, because it would have been Dodgers Yankees in the World Series that year, but since Steinbrenner wouldn't let his team go, the Kansas City Royals went.
I don't remember any of that stuff. Damn.
Steinbrenner was like the prototype for the jerk meddling owner of sports franchises.
But that's how it would go today, though. Nobody would be allowed to play, and it was weird that those networks all let their star actors and actresses on this show. And it's weird that they all let it air on ABC, even though it was NBC, CBS, ABC. And every one of them, aired with Howard Cosell on ABC. So that none of that would happen today.
No, because of, you're right, contracts, money, it's too valuable. You wouldn't want your football players or baseball players or anybody doing anything outside of their normal activity. Or if you did have it, it would be, it's the practice squad of the Super Bowl champions against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this last one, it'd be the Kansas City offensive line against.
Well,
to go harp back on that.
And then the network stars. So what would it be, the streaming stars now? Would it be Netflix against Hulu versus Amazon Prime? I mean.
So they tried to reboot it a couple, three or 4 years ago. And then they did just one-offs. Like it would be TV Cops versus TV Dads or, you know, that kind of thing.
And then towards and
Pornhub against the David Duchovny sex addict group.
I think you just had a $1 million idea there.
That would
Yeah. Plus, he was married to Tia Leone, who was hot back then.
Yep.
And then they announced that she must have like walked like John Wayne into the hospital, you know, like she was a little sore, and they got a divorce, and it was because of that. He says.
He's the man.
Because he had a sex addiction and. She couldn't stand it anymore. It's like, you know, fuck. And then they had to get a divorce. True story.
He actually would bring it into X-Files. Like, he'd call somebody on the phone, and it sounded like he was listening to porn because there'd be some spanky noise. And then they would cut to him, and he'd be dribbling a basketball in his bedroom or whatever. And it was like just stupid stuff like that.
I love that show, X-Files.
So, I don't think of that would work today, like all the superstars playing against each other.
No.
Yeah.
No, so now when you watch those competition things, it's like the Ninja Warrior thing. It's just people you don't know or things like that. It's not these mainstream athletes. It's not the big names.
Yeah, but...
not only that, but they would turn it into something where the actual competition is playing second fiddle to whatever the sponsorships are. So you've got like two minutes of your show, 5 minutes of the Lagatuda, drug commercial or whatever, and then back to 2 minutes. And really what you're watching is disingenuous anyway because of liability issues and all that kind of stuff. So it's just not as pure as it was, you know, in the 70s.
Yeah.
I don't know if that rings true for you guys, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that Battle of the Network Stars was just fun to watch because I guess they filmed it on Pepperdine University, and you'd always see those station wagons parked on the cliffs in the background, and then I forgot what else I was gonna say. towards the end, I was seeing they had like Growing Pains versus Family Ties and stuff. They had like just weird ones towards the end.
Yeah, because the early years they would have maybe two stars from a single show, like Gabe Kaplan and the actor that played Epstein.
Yeah,
in the from Welcome Back, Kotter, but they got more. It seems like as the years went by, it was three or four of them from just the shows. So I don't know if that was because it was messing up with their filming or
probably. And you know, a lot of these guys that were actors had it in their contracts that if they got hurt or whatever. Same with athletes, which is why they don't do a lot of stuff in the off season is because. It's right in their contract that if they're out fucking around and get hurt, you don't get paid. So it's just a new world that way.
Did both of you watch Battle of the Network Stars growing up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you root for your favorite the network with your favorite shows on, or you're just watching it just to watch it? Because I remember rooting strongly for the shows that we watched.
Yep. Yeah. I think I rooted for I think I always wanted NBC to win for some reason. Yeah.
I was there strictly for masturbation, looking at the big boobs of all the, like you were saying before, and I was just soaking all that in. Mike, you're going to have to cut that out.
because you'd have been six when it started.
I started early.
Apparently so.
Actually, at that time, I was transfixed at what I was watching because you're used to seeing them all in these different, in a different way, and then they're all out there without their makeup on or without the clothes they wear in their shows. They look so unfamiliar and so different than what they're. So it just was kind of a weird thing for me to watch that stuff.
And then they had the cool team colors. Like, wasn't NBC always red and CBS was always blue? They had those Adidas track suits
with their
names on the back.
Red. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah, and I was just watching, I guess, the big competition in the women's for Battle of the Network Stars was Laura Ingalls, Melissa Gilbert, against
Christy McNichol. Whatever happened to Christy McNichol? She was like the biggest.
Jimmy McNichol.
Yeah, they were the biggest stars in the world. Yeah. Right.
And then they just fell off the face of the earth, it seems like.
Yep.
Yeah, I forgot about them. The Osmonds were kind of the same.
Robbie Benson was just huge, and then he's just gone.
Benson. Was he the boy in the plastic bubble?
No, I think that was Travolta, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, yeah.
But he was like around that time period.
Did you see that movie, Ryan?
I did not.
It's worth watching.
It's going to be next week's episode, so start watching it now.
Yeah. Find another guest.